in Randolph County and from us around. Everybody loves that smooth sound. Radio Ransparta means WHCO.
For folks on the go, it's 1230.
That's WHBO. We love to have you with us. We want you all to know.
Country 1230 and 97.3 WHCO. Time now for the People Speak program. We're taking your calls at 443-2121 or toll free 877-443-1230. Now, the People Speak.
Good morning. It is 9:27. I'm Jeff, and this is the People Speak. Hope you're having a good wet Friday morning.
Great weather if you're a duck.
Exactly. We were talking today with Senator Paul Schimpf, and who's floated in this morning, right?
I did. I drove down from Monroe County, so happy 2020. This is the first time I've been in the sea in the new year, so it's. It's always good to be in here with you. I enjoy being on your program, and it's we're trying to get back into the swing of things for 2020. The General Assembly session really doesn't convene until the last week of January. The week of the 27th is when we go back in and kind of get to work. So what I've been doing is just a few events here and there around the district, but mostly trying to just prepare and get ready for my legislative agenda for this last session that I'm going to be in Springfield.
All right, I'll tell you what. Let's take a break here, and we'll come back, and we'll see what we got to talk about today. Again, we're talking with Senator Paul Schimpf here on The People Speak, and we'll be back right after this. And welcome back. 9:34, and again, I'm Jeff. This is The People Speak, talking today with Senator Paul Schimpf, and as you said, a little bit of a lull right now, but things will be kicking back up here towards the end of the month, I guess.
That's correct. The first time that I have to go up is actually a Sunday. I have to go up one Sunday before that because the Senate Democrats are going to be electing their new leader, who is the Senate President. So we talked a little bit the last time I was in here about the fact that Senate President John Cullerton is resigning. And, he was somebody that I had basically almost nothing in common with politically. There's just very, pretty much the opposite side of the political spectrum for me. But I did respect him because, I really felt like he was trying to do what he thought was right for the state of Illinois. And I think, it's important that we understand that just because you disagree with somebody politically doesn't make them a bad person. We really, to me, I think the fact, I'm an engineer. That was what my undergraduate degree was in, mechanical engineering. But one of my beliefs is that if you're going to be able to solve a problem and understand a problem, you need to look at it from two perspectives. So we definitely need to have two different perspectives, so we need our differences of opinions as Republicans and Democrats if we're going to solve the very real challenges that our state faces. That being said, we also need a little bit of a check and a balance as well. And right now in Illinois, the Democratic Party does control really all aspects of state government. They have super majorities in both the Illinois House and the Illinois Senate, and they control the governor's mansion with Governor Pritzker. So that reality kind of tempers what I'm going to be working on legislatively this spring. I've always kind of viewed myself as a pragmatist, and when I announce my legislative priorities, it's stuff that I think has a shot of getting passed. There's stuff you and I, before we went on the air, we were talking about, some of these ridiculous new fees that are being charged by the DMV, and I voted I voted against those, and I would vote to repeal them if I have the opportunity to do that. But I'm not listing that as one of my legislative priorities, because realistically, it's, you know, if I listed that as my priority, it would not go anywhere.
Right.
Some other Midwestern states have rules that say if you file a bill, it automatically gets a committee hearing, it automatically gets a vote. We don't have that in Illinois. In the Illinois House and the Illinois Senate, the only way that legislation moves is if it has the support of the chamber leader, the president of the Senate or the speaker of the Illinois House. The only way legislation moves is if those individuals support it and they allow it to move. Because as soon as I file legislation, and I can file whatever legislation I want, but it goes to the assignments committee in the Senate, and sometimes it may not, you know, a bill may not ever make it out of the assignments committee if the Senate president doesn't like that piece of legislation. So when we talk about my legislative priorities a little bit later in the show, understand that part of the criteria for making this list is stuff that I think is going to have a chance to get bipartisan support and actually become law.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, it doesn't do much good to put something out there knowing at the start that it's going nowhere.
No, and that's one of the things I think that gets people frustrated about politics. And, you know, since I'm coming to the end of my term and I'm not going to be, you know, running again, you know, we'll have more opportunities to kind of reflect on, you know, what's good and what's bad and what's ugly about politics. But I think one of the things that people get frustrated about and turned off in politics is when you have politicians who basically just... instead of trying to get results, just try to stoke outrage. One of the things that I've learned, unfortunately, during my short political career is that outrage is easy, but governance is tough. It's very difficult to actually make hard choices and govern, but it's easy to get everybody outraged. And, you know, really when you hear a politician coming to you and saying, okay, I'm going to do this, the question needs to be, okay, yes, you can do that. What are the chances of it actually getting done?
Right. So I know last year you kind of laid out your...
last year when I did my legislative priorities, I put forth some what I thought were good constitutional, you know, changes that I thought would... You know, I said at the time, I'm playing the long game here. These are probably not something that's going to happen this session right away, but I think this is something, you know, when you're talking about changes to our Constitution in the state of Illinois, you know, you're talking about, you know, really decades in the making as far as building up support. So this year, I, you know, instead of going kind of that high level, I do have some more micro stuff that's specifically targeted to the 58th Senate District here. And one of the things that I'd like to kind of talk about briefly before we go to the break is I'm going to be introducing legislation to give pension parity to our security techs at the Chester Mental Health Center. And what I'm talking about is for those of you that are unaware of the jobs that those individuals do, you know, we have a lot of state facilities in the district. We have corrections facilities, and corrections officers do a very dangerous and stressful job. And because of that, they're able to take advantage of some favorable pension provisions in our state pension system. Well, the security technicians at the Chester Mental Health Center, in my opinion, are doing a job that is as dangerous as our corrections officers have, because these security technicians are dealing with the Hannibal Lecters of the world, individuals that, you know, have committed crimes but have been found not sane enough to go to trial. You know, so we're dealing with the criminally insane. That's a very dangerous job, and I think they ought to be treated in the same manner as corrections officers are. So that's going to be one of the bills that I'm going to file this spring, is to, you know, give those security techs at Chester Mental Health and the other DHS facilities that are similar to Chester, I want to give them pension parity along with the corrections officers.
Which, yeah, I agree with that. Should be. I mean, having lived in this area my entire life, you know, I mean, I've talked to people that have worked down there, and that is a very dangerous.
It is, and really, one of the things that I've tried to do when I talk about our first responders, I try to include our corrections officers and some of these security technicians in that group as well, because people, you know, that are not in those jobs, a lot of times don't realize how dangerous they are. And it's not just the fact that you're dealing with dangerous individuals. It just takes, the stress on you takes a toll. When you are constantly have to be on alert, worrying, am I going to be attacked? If I turn my back and drop my guard, somebody's going to go after me. You know, it's a similar stressful condition like a lot of our troops had when we were in Iraq and Afghanistan, just worrying about, you know, being attacked by an improvised explosive device. It's just the fact that you always have to be on guard is tremendously stressful on both you, and then you come home and you can't relax with your family. So, mm-hmm. You know, this correction to kind of give the security techs at our DHS facilities that are dealing with the criminally insane, give them some parity with the corrections folks' pensions. You know, I think that's just the right thing to do. There, in the short term, there's not really going to be a cost that's going to come with it. Maybe in the long term, there would be a slight cost, but we're talking about statewide. We're talking about 600 individuals, I think, is who would be affected. But, you know, certainly a lot of them are down here at Chester Mental Health, and that's something that, you know, that's a correction that's overdue and needs to be made.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay. There was another one you were.
Well, another thing that this is something that I think I can get done, because we're not talking about a whole heck of a lot of money, but if you remember, I lost an argument the last session about the motor fuel tax. I was opposed to raising the motor fuel tax unless there was some type of spending cuts to go with it. I understand that we needed to spend more money on our infrastructure. Our roads are atrocious, and a part of me is glad that we are as a state going to be making some investments in our roads and bridges. However, I felt like as a government of Illinois, if we're going to ask people to pay more in taxes, we need to try to cut spending first. I think that's the only way you have any moral authority to ask people to pay more in taxes, is if you try to cut spending. And we did not do that. We just, you know, we have increased spending across the board, and we increased the motor fuel taxes by a large amount. Everybody, I think, realizes by now motor fuel taxes went up 19 cents a gallon. That's just the motor fuel tax. What we're also paying, though, is we're also paying state sales tax on the taxes that we are paying. So that 19 cents a gallon, that goes into the whole pot that is calculated for the state sales tax. I had said last year, I'll consider voting to increase the motor fuel tax if you stop charging sales tax on gasoline. Mm-hmm. Nobody took me up on that offer. But what I'm going to file legislation to do this year is, I just, as a matter of principle, believe that you should not be taxed on tax that you are already paying. The idea that, you know, if you want to tax me on a good or a service that I am buying, fine. I'm not going to be happy about that, but I can live with that. That's the way government works. But when you're taxing me on taxes, I have a real moral problem with that. So I'm going to file legislation that just says, okay, if we're going to charge sales tax on the purchase of motor fuel, that sales tax can only be calculated on the motor fuel itself. It can't be calculated on the motor fuel and the taxes that we're paying to the state, the feds, and local entities. So that's another bill. And I think a lot of people are just going to, a lot of other elected officials are going to be like, yeah, that makes sense. It's wrong to charge tax on tax. Mm-hmm. And we're not, when I had said, let's do away with the, you know, with the sales tax on motor fuel, do away with that sales tax altogether, that would have had a price tag of about $700 million. That's a big price tag. I think if you just change the format where you're only taxing the motor fuel itself. You're not taxing the tax. I think that would probably, the price tag for that, that would maybe cause the state to lose maybe about 60 or $70 million in receipts, which honestly, in a budget of 40.5 billion, you know, 60 million is not that big of a chunk of that, and we ought to be able to reduce spending by that amount to make up for that loss of revenue.
Right. All right, I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and take our second break here, and we'll come back and talk some more with Senator Paul Schimpf here on The People Speak right after this. And welcome back, and again talking with Senator Paul Schimpf, and here today, and again, things will start moving again here towards the end of the month.
Yep. So you know, we already in the last segment we talked about the you know, trying to change the way we calculate sales tax on gas. Just, you know, that's kind of a, I think that's just the right thing to do. And same thing with getting pension parity for the security techs at you know, at DHS facilities like Chester Mental Health. Another thing that I want to focus on this spring is, I want to try to, get some legislation moving to help the, Kaskaskia Regional Port District. One of the things that I've tried to do as a state senator is really assist the economic engines that we have in the district, to try to be able to promote economic activity. So I've tried to work really hard to help SIU Carbondale. They're the largest employer in the district, and I really think that, you know, as SIU Carbondale goes, so goes Southern Illinois. I've also tried to really promote and assist the World Shooting and Recreational Complex here in Sparta, and you know, I'm optimistic. You know, I've had some people asking me, well, when are we gonna have a new executive director out there, because you know, as I think a lot of you know, Monica Brockman, you know, moved on. You know, that was her choice to move on, and she did a great job. And we haven't had an executive director for a couple months. I have been talking both with the department and also with Centralized Management Services, and I think we're getting close to having somebody on board there. So between having a new executive director and then, you know, really the fact that we have a strategic planning study for that facility as well, you know, I'm optimistic that facility is going to do well. And then another huge economic engine for southwestern Illinois is the Kaskaskia Regional Port District. I filed legislation last year. It's still working its way through the House to try to increase the Port District's ability to compete for state and federal grants. And talking with the director about what else we can do, I'm going to file legislation to try to create a new class of inactive permit where you don't have to spend as much money to keep the permit active. I think if you know, what I'm talking about is if you have a permit, for instance, to ship coal, but you're not using it, instead of paying the full price for that permit that you're not using, you know, I would like to see the state create a category of permit that's just inactive, where you can pay a reduced fee, still keep the permit, it's just inactive, and then you don't have to go back to square one. If you don't have to do the process of letting it expire and then going back and starting from scratch. So I do want to get some legislation through to help the Kaskaskia Regional Port District. The other thing that I'm thinking that I'm going to file legislation on is in response to the floods that we had last year, Governor Pritzker had declared an emergency that allowed these levy districts to make improvements to their levies without having to go through the permit process. Well, once the emergency was over with, some of these levy districts got letters from the Illinois Department of Natural Resources saying, okay, the emergency is over with, you have to remove whatever improvements you added to the levies. And we had a meeting, and it came out that, well, you know, they could, if they didn't want to have to remove their improvements, they could submit a permit application to let the improvements be permanent. The problem with that is the permitting process is not easy. You have to hire an engineering firm. Sometimes we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars to get a study done. What I'm going to do is I'm going to file legislation that basically presumes, in the absence of evidence saying that there is a problem, that's going to presume that the improvements are good and that they can stay, so that we can kind of streamline this permit process and just do the same thing, which is not, you know, every other year put stuff in and then spend thousands of dollars taking it out. So those are the other two legislative items that I'm looking at doing this spring, and I think we've got a good shot at getting those done.
But we're running out of time here, but quickly, we had Dr. Mark Keenan in the other day talking about the Southern Illinois Connector, which...
Yes, and if you go to the Connector website, you can, the final version of the report was loaded yesterday, so that's available for download. People can review it. I think that task force did a great job. Dr. Keenan provided exceptional leadership, and I think the document really lays out the case for a four-lane highway connecting Carbondale with the Metro East.
All right, Senator, thanks for being with us today.
Always a pleasure talking with you, Jeff. Enjoy the rest of the day.
All right, you too. We'll talk to you again on Monday. Have a great weekend.